Hello, Rhiannon Giddens.
Hi.
Thanks for taking some time today.
Yeah.
It's going to be kind of a lightning round because there's so many things that you've been working on recently, and I'm interested in what we have coming up as well. But let's start with the ballet, and assuming that the audience doesn't know anything, I'll have a little bit of chance to set it up. But what's your introduction to people about what Lucy Negro Redux is?
I mean, I guess the elevator speech, you know, when people want to know what's the ballet about, it's the possible inspiration for Shakespeare's Dark Lady sonnets. These are some of the most famous sonnets in English literature. And poet Caroline Randall Williams has done an entire book of poetry based on this idea that this woman who actually existed, Lucy, also called Lucy Negro and many other aliases, who ran a brothel in London around the same time as.
To be clear, historically documented.
Yes,
she
this
was
is
able
an
to
actual
track
person.
That person.
Yes, she discovered a professor who had sort of posited this first, like this could be, you know, Shakespeare's Dark Lady, and met him, and you know, found out about her, and started to sort of get into who was Lucy, you know, who is this woman, and who might have inspired some of the most beautiful poetry that we know of, and what does that mean for me as a Black woman? You know, these are the questions that she kind of posits in this poetry book. And so Paul Vasterling, who is creative director of the Nashville Ballet, fell in love with these poems and the way that Caroline read them, you know, which is important piece because she is a part of the production, you know, reading or performing some of these poems. So you have lots of different platforms being sort of melded together in this. It's not just a ballet, you know, it's a ballet based on poetry with spoken word in it and, you know, new music written by myself and Francesco. And I think it's a really beautiful idea.
How did the spoken word component shape what you wanted to do as a musician? It would have been a fundamentally different thing, assuming you would even have taken it on. Of course, that the spoken word is the subject matter which fascinated mm-hmm. you, but how did the actual rhythm of the language lead you down the path that you've gone as a composer?
Well, I approached, it's different, there's different approaches here because there's the instrumental music and the themes that sort of came, you know, each character has a theme, each character's relationship has its own theme, you know. So these are all instrumental things. And then there was the idea of setting some of Caroline's poetry to music. And that is, the process of that was very interesting because I kind of rejected the idea of making a song, of like messing with her words, basically. Because, you know, like a poem doesn't necessarily, there's not necessarily lyrics. You know, they're two different things, you know. And lyrics aren't poetry. You know, they're a poetry of a sort, you know, but a poem doesn't always translate into lyrics. And so I was very hesitant to sort of, I tried it a bit and I was just like, oh, this doesn't really feel good to me. Like they're written the way they're written for a reason. And so I kind of found this way of finding, you know, ways of setting the words so that they were song-like, you know, but I didn't have to alter what they were. I mean, sometimes I repeat a few things, you know, more than an original poem, but I don't alter any of the structure of her words. And I don't create a chorus. I don't create, you know, these aspects of songs. Kind of more like a through-composed kind of thing where I'm just responding to the way the words flow, and then that it creates its own sort of musical motive, and then figure out how that works on the banjo or whatever I'm doing with it. And I did that a couple times in the show, and I really liked that. It kind of felt like a really nice meeting her, you know, meeting her in the middle rather than sort of like taking her words and sort of deconstructing them and making a song. You know, I just didn't want to do that.
Some of your pre-existing work mm-hmm. winds up here. How did that make the cut? What was the test that said this deserves to be at the purchaser's option? I don't know if it's the full song or excerpt, but
yeah, I mean these were Paul's ideas. You know, he was going through my sort of my published work, you know, also in thinking about. I mean, I think it's really cool to bring in a few things. You know, most of the score is original, but there are these moments like Purchaser's Option, and then there's a instrumental called Following the North Star from Freedom Highway that we've sort of revamped. And, you know, Purchaser's is, you know, 2/3 of the song, and, you know, the juxtaposition of it just, you know, gives it a whole new life, you know, when you consider it in terms of Lucy and where it comes in the ballet, and the fact that Francesco had the idea to put it in 7, which gives it a whole different urgency, you know, than the original, which is on banjos in 4. And you know, all of these things kind of contribute to, you know, this idea, oh, I've heard this, but it's totally new, you know. And I think having a few moments of that just for my fans is cool. It kind of, it gives them a different connection into the into the ballet. And people who don't know it at all, it totally seems like it's just, you know, was written for the story, you know. And that's not an easy balance to strike, you know. And I think the ones that Paul chose were kind of perfect. He just chose a few, you know, like I think it's three pieces. There's also The Love We Almost Had, and the way that that's deconstructed, I won't spoil it, but it's very, very funny. So it's great to have those kind of just moments in there, you know, of my previous work.
And I'm catching you here in late rehearsal, like yes. The real creative decisions, the final vision is coming into shape. Yeah. It must feel pretty cool.
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's great to see it with the dancers. You know, that's the proof in the pudding. You know, we can sit in a room all day long and we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But until we see it with the dancers, like it's not real, you know.
How different is your creative life and intent now than, say, 5 or 6 years ago?
Oh, my God. It's like, who was that person? I don't even know. I mean, I'm so grateful for that time. You know, I was still doing the Carolina Chocolate. I was just transitioning from the Carolina Chocolate Drops into my solo career. But it's definitely become much more of a creative life. You know, I still am very much an interpreter. You know, I'm very interested in sort of giving old songs new life and, you know, putting them through a lens of today. And I think there's just a lot of things that have been left on the shelf that need to be aired. But I definitely have found over the years that I'm finding more and more of my creative life to be in writing, you know, and actually not just writing, but also collaborating. You know, I'm very rarely just going to sit in a room and write a bunch of stuff. You know, it's like I write things and then I want to work with somebody and develop them or, you know, write more stuff or have a reason to do it or, you know, so my collaborative opportunities have really grown, you know, since I left the band because it's a lot easier to sort of do things as your own person, you know, than to, okay, do we all agree to do this? And is this right for the image of the band? Da, 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 da. There's all these things you have to think about when you're in a band that I don't have to think about anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's really also allowed me a lot to focus on the woman side of things, which is hard to do when you're in all, you know, when you're in a band full of boys, you know, it's a different thing. And now I feel like I can focus a bit more on, you know, what I'm finding is very, very important and front and center for me, which are women's issues and women of color, you know, in particular, like dealing with the history of what we've had to go through in this country and in other places and what does that mean and creating platforms for other women of color to have their voices heard, you know, in my limited capacity for what I can do for that I'm trying to do, you know. So
I heard you talk some time ago about a project you were working on that had to do with Wilmington, North Carolina, and a, what shall we call it? Is that project still on track? And
it's like, I mean, it's at the very beginning, you know. Uh-huh. It's one of those things, like Caroline likes to talk about speaking things into being, which she's totally right, which is kind of how she feels about this ballet, you know. And I am feeling that about Wilmington. It's like, I have this idea. I'm in partnership with this amazing writer who lives in Wilmington and also another musician. And it's like, you just have to keep talking about it until somebody goes, here.
Okay.
Here's some money, like, make this thing, you know.
It would be musical theater.
It'd be musical theater, mm-hmm. like in a way that I like to say somewhere in between Oklahoma and Hamilton. You know, it's like neither one nor the other, but something that's, you know, that's kind of the dream, but it, you know, it hasn't been made yet. And we're in the beginning ideas of, you know, what's the story and how do we pick these things from all the stuff that happened around that time and how do we craft this? We have very strong ideas right now, so that's kind of where it's at.
Sounds good. You have background with opera, which may be the most collaborative of all the fine arts. I mean,
yes.
You've got from costumes mm-hmm. to set design. There's so many teams building a giant team.
Yeah.
And you've even started to work on it. You've even started doing an opera podcast recently.
Yes.
Can you kind of put that into context for folks and why what led you to do an opera-based podcast at this time in your life?
Well, it's I was approached by the Metropolitan Opera to be a guest on this podcast, and then it just turned into becoming the host of this podcast. And so that's been really fun, you know. The wonderful producer, Marin Lazian, I mean, she's put it all together, and then I'm there to provide context. And, you know, if there's stuff that jibes with what I know, particularly like Othello, or Otello, as it is in the Verdi opera, you know, I could bring in my expertise on blackface and, you know, things like that. It's been great. And, you know, I'm going to be in my first production next year as a sort of mature artist and doing a Bess, you know, Porgy and Bess at Greensboro Opera.
I saw that at the Greensboro Opera, your hometown.
Yeah.
And tickets just went on sale for a show that's going to be at the end of 2020.
It's pretty hilarious. Yeah. But, you know, there's already a lot of seats, you know, gone. It's kind of crazy. It's to open up the new art center in Greensboro. There's a new big Tanger art center that's being built right now in downtown Greensboro. So it's kind of part of my involvement in my hometown and trying to, you know, lend whatever I can to the art, you know, the art situation, and then also an opportunity to sing Bess that I've never been able to do. So
that's amazing.
So operas come back into my world in kind of unexpected ways. I'm writing an opera, you know, 5 years ago, I would have never seen any of it would be happening. I sing with orchestras on a kind of regular basis. And so it's been really wonderful to see that come back into my life, because it is something that I love so much and that I have spent a lot of my time, you know, a lot of my years doing. So I'm like, we'll see where it goes. I don't know.
Another project to ask about, you just released music with a quartet, Our Native Daughters, and each of them individual musicians that we in Roots Music have been watching with fascination from three other different points of the compass.
Yeah.
Just give us a synopsis of this and what motivated you to get working with artists who I gather in Amethyst Key's situation, quite a bit younger, very much an emerging artist. Mm-hmm. Allison Russell is with Birds of Chicago, and they are a couple records into their life, but a huge, huge acclaim for them. And Layla McCalla's fascinating background, Haitian, I gather. Mm-hmm. So what a cool mix of people.
Yeah, it was an amazing opportunity. You know, Smithsonian Folkways asked me to, you know, I was already kind of working on this idea of early American history, early American musical history, and speaking to it through the music of the banjo and the music of minstrelsy. And so it kind of took this little turn and became this record with these really strong women of color, which, you know, kind of just ended up as I was, you know, with my co-producer Dirk Powell, we were just talking about who we wanted to be on this project, and that's kind of where I ended up. I was just like, oh, this is where it needs to go, you know. And then from then on, it kind of took this slightly different path down to, you know, really just talking about the woman of color's experience in America and looking at the history of that, and then having a platform to respond to that in an artistic way. And so each of the women who came in, I just said, look, this is just bring your banjo. And, I mean, seriously, you
any
know,
good conversation starts that way.
Yeah. And let's talk about, you know, what we want to say about what it means to be a woman of color here, and what it means to have ancestors have gone through what they've gone through. And there's somebody very unhappy about their ballet class, but you know, and it was an amazing experience to watch them, you know, just have this, feel like they had the space to write about these things that, you know, maybe they've touched on, but just to kind of have days to focus on, you know, these themes, you know, and these ideas. And it was just a really beautiful collaborative thing. We were down in Louisiana, and each of them, so funny, people say that Amethyst is in the beginning of her career, and I just kind of think of her as an old soul already, you know. I'm always surprised. I'm like, oh yeah, you know. And I know I've worked with each of them in various ways, you know, so I just knew, okay, this is gonna work, you know. And it works better than I could have ever really dreamed. I mean, it went places I would have never considered. And this is why you know you pick people and then you just let the project do what it does, instead of going, well, it's not exactly what I envisioned, and it's like, usually because it's better, so leave it alone and let it do what it's going to do. And it's, I'm really pleased with it.
Do you embrace or maybe resist a little bit the concept or the idea that this would put you in a position of mentorship of some artists who are aiming to be important in folk music going forward at a time when the conversation that you've helped start, that people at Folk Alliance, that Bluegrass have been having, have been, well, now that we've identified this sort of deficit, this wish for greater diversity and more voices and more inclusion in our field, this is one way it's happening. And in a way, here you are in that place. Are you a leader? Are you a follower? How do you kind of frame that?
Well, I mean, I'm always looking for ways to facilitate, you know.
Facilitate.
I mean, I was guest curator at Cambridge, and, you know, I chose almost all acts of color, you know, or at least mixed. And a lot of the same, it was Amethyst was there, Allie from Birds, you know, Birds of Chicago, and then Yola Carter, who's about to release a big record.
Yeah.
Kaya Cater, who's released two really great records. And, you know, I'm just like, there's so many amazing people, and people in these positions, like, you know, the folks put on Cambridge, Smithsonian Folkways, they're looking to me and asking me, and I'm like, hey, these people, you know what I mean? Because they're awesome, you know? And it's like, if that's how I can use whatever little power I have in the world, that's what I want to use it for. It's not, I don't really care about, I mean, I've got my own career and it's very important to me, but that's also very important to me, is creating the community of people who are doing this, because, you know, that was the strength of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, is that we were a band and we had each other, you know, in a time where even less than now people were like, black people and banjos, what, you know, we had each other. And I know what that community can mean as an artist, you know, it really gives you strength. And so that was my idea with our Native Daughters and with anything that I'm, you know, man, Amethyst is open for me, you know, Layla was part of the Chocolate Drops. JT and Allie, like, you know, there's been moments where I've definitely championed them as much as I can, you know, so it's like, I think that's what we need to do for each other. And, you know, if I'm in a position where somebody asks me who has power, I'm going to spread that around, like, because that's what you should, I think that's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. They, you know, they tell writers to, a good bit of advice is show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And it strikes me that the roots world is moving from a phase of talking and telling to a phase of showing.
Just doing it.
Does that think that's fair to say in some way?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely moving that in my own life. Like, you know, there was a lot of talking with the Chocolate Drops because you had to educate people. But there was also a lot of just doing. You know, we found the balance of going, well, we could textualize this and then we're just going to play it, because, I mean, the facts are the facts, and we're not in a position to shame you or to make you feel bad about not knowing this. We didn't know this. But, like, I have definitely found that over time I'm tired. You know, I just want to play and sing. And, like, the next record that I'm, you know, that's my sort of, it's not a project, it's not a mission, it's, you know, it's my record that's coming out. It's coming out in May, I think. It's coming out this year for sure.
And oh, wow. Okay.
And Francesco and I did that together. And it's really all of the worlds that I've been sort of talking about and being in all together. You know, it's like, I just want somebody to put it on and listen to it, and they don't know anything about me, and they come away going, like, that, you know, I want them to love the record, but I also want them to feel this aspect of nobody owns any sounds. Nobody owns, you know, experiences in humanity. It's like we're taking all of the sounds that you heard, like, in the ballet, and, you know, the notion that humans have been moving since the beginning and we've been affecting each other since the beginning. And so, you know, a religious trance drum from Iran works perfectly well with an Appalachian a cappella ballad, you know, because they're representing universal human truths, you know. And so it'd be really nice to just have people experience that through sound and through the experience of the songs. And then, yeah, we can, of course, we'll talk about it, but I don't want to, I'm kind of moving to showing, mm-hmm. you know, and just in inhabiting all of the work that's come up until now, and just living in that and just taking that to where it needs to go, you know.
Well, I just love the fact, too, that you, because I've been passionate about this for years, that you're in a wonderful position to bridge. Another bridge you can build is between folk and roots music and vernacular music and fine arts.
Yes.
High art, you know, operatic music. And those are worlds that, you know, we know the history of the of Bartok or Dvorak, mm-hmm. and the themes and moving in. But in contemporary, you know, the years I've grown up, you've had to really look for people who didn't see those as separate worlds.
Right.
What would you say about
Yeah, I mean, even in the new record, there's two arias. I'm not singing them classically. You know, we are, you know, Francesco and I are both conservatory trained, but also have been very deep in folk worlds, you know, of our respective sort of heritages, you know. And so being able to meet in the middle with, you know, an aria and just letting it be a song, you know, and I think that the ability to do that is kind of predicated with how much you're willing to let go of your training, how much you're willing to let that training support what you're trying to do in a way that's maybe different than you were taught. You know what I mean? And I think so. I mean, even that is represented on the new record. It's like there's the folk in vernacular world to classical world. There's the, you know, European and to American, that bridging that, you know, with the idea that both worlds have been very affected by African music and rhythms, you know, and in ways that nobody wants to talk about, you know, and then they meet, you know, in this with these instruments that come together, and you're like, whoa, that makes total sense, even though, you know, if you looked at it, you'd be like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. But like, you know, it's connections. It's, you know, it's finding, you know, ultimately an aria is a song. Ultimately, the song is a story. Right. And I think the ability to do that takes having empathy and looking at, you know, playing different kinds of music and being willing to put yourself in a situation where maybe you haven't trained for 20 years to do this. You know, you just have to like sit and listen and try to, and, you know, figure it out. I think having both of those approaches, I think, is important. You know, it's like I had the time in the conservatory and then I had the time sitting with Joe Thompson and just listening to him play fiddle and trying to catch it. You know, trying to catch a vibe. He's playing four notes. You know what I mean? But in those four notes is a lifetime of playing, you know, dance music that's connected to generations before him. So it is just as important as, you know, my years at conservatory learning how to sing high Q sharps, you know? It's a massive kind of thing, but the way that you take it in is different. And if you can combine those things, I think that's the way forward, really, for knocking that barrier down between vernacular and classical. It's like being able to look over and go, you know, that's not really that different from what I'm doing, you know, and I'm not going to try to fake it. I'm just going to try to find the core of it, you know?
I know. I hope more and more people do. I love that approach. I love that philosophy. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.